A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
7 years of drinking a glass of water and feeling like I swallowed a basketball. I had abdominal surgery, and ever since, my stomach just doesn't handle volume the way it used to. The thing my kidneys need most, plain water, is the thing that causes the most physical discomfort. And I know I'm not alone in that.
It's the paradox that nobody talks about. Your body needs hydration, your kidneys are counting on it, and yet the act of drinking can be genuinely painful. And look, it's early July. We're in peak summer across the Northern Hemisphere. Heat waves are driving ER visits for dehydration and kidney stress at the same time. People are being told to drink more water, and for a lot of them, that advice is incomplete at best, and at worst, it's setting them up for failure.
Daniel sent us this one, and it hits close to home. He's been dealing with the same post-surgery hydration struggle, that bloating and discomfort after even small amounts of liquid. His question is basically this. How much water do our kidneys actually need to function at their best? Is pure water really the gold standard? And if you can't tolerate it, what's the second best option? And he wants those answers tailored. Age-specific, geography-specific, work-specific. Not just generic advice.
Which is exactly the right question. Because what we're going to do today is answer the thing almost nobody asks. When water itself is the problem, what do you reach for instead? And the answers are more surprising than you'd think.
Let's start with what your kidneys actually need, because the numbers are wild. Your kidneys filter about 180 liters of blood every single day. That's enough to fill a bathtub. And then they reabsorb 99% of that fluid back into your bloodstream. It's this incredibly precise recycling system.
That stat from the National Kidney Foundation always stops me in my tracks. 180 liters. And here's why that matters for hydration. Even a small fluid deficit forces your kidneys to concentrate urine more aggressively. The countercurrent multiplier system in the loop of Henle, which is this elegant biological engineering that normally maintains your water balance, starts working overtime. And concentrated urine is exactly the condition where calcium oxalate and uric acid crystals start forming. That's the pathway to stones.
The margin for error is thinner than people realize. Which makes the standard advice even more frustrating. You've heard it your whole life. 8 glasses of water, 8 ounces each, every day. The 8x8 rule. It's printed on water bottles. It's in every wellness article. Doctors repeat it.
It has no scientific origin. Harvard Health traced this back to a 1945 recommendation from the Food and Nutrition Board. The original guidance said adults need about 2.5 liters of water daily, but, and this is the part everyone forgot, most of that comes from food. Fruits, vegetables, soups, even meat is about 60% water. The 8x8 rule stripped out the food component entirely and became this standalone mandate that was never actually supported by evidence.
A game of telephone that lasted 80 years and shaped public health messaging. That's almost impressive.
It really is. And it's created this blind spot where we treat hydration as a volume target instead of a physiological state. The actual kidney-specific metric is urine color and frequency. Pale yellow urine, about the color of straw, and somewhere around 6 to 7 voids per day. That's adequate hydration for most healthy adults, not some arbitrary number of glasses.
Which brings us to the second problem. Even if you know the right metric, what happens when the act of drinking is the barrier? Daniel mentioned functional dyspepsia and gastroparesis from his gallbladder surgery. And this is where gastric accommodation comes in.
Gastric accommodation is your stomach's ability to relax and expand to hold volume without building up pressure. It's a reflex. Food or liquid enters, the stomach stretches, and normally you don't feel a thing. But after certain abdominal surgeries and with conditions like functional dyspepsia, that reflex breaks down. The stomach doesn't relax properly. So even 200 milliliters of water, that's less than a cup, can trigger stretch receptor pain signals. Bloating, discomfort, that feeling Korn described of swallowing a basketball.
The standard response from well-meaning people is just drink more water, you'll get used to it. Which is physiologically nonsensical if your stomach literally cannot accommodate the volume. You're telling someone whose stretch receptors are firing pain signals to just push through it.
It's advice that assumes the plumbing works the same for everyone, and when it doesn't, you need a completely different approach, which is exactly where we're headed next. To understand why water can hurt, we need to look at two systems most people never connect, your kidneys and your stomach. And the bridge between them is something called antidiuretic hormone, or ADH. When you're low on water, your pituitary gland releases ADH. That tells your kidneys to pull water back into the bloodstream instead of sending it to the bladder. It's the body's conservation mode.
ADH is basically the kidney's boss saying, "Stop sending water out. We need it here."
And the mechanism that does the actual work is the countercurrent multiplier in the loop of Henle. Imagine a U-shaped tube where fluid flows down one side and up the other, with the surrounding tissue getting saltier and saltier as you go deeper into the kidney. That salt gradient pulls water out of the urine by osmosis. It's brilliant engineering. But when you're dehydrated, the urine becomes more and more concentrated as the system squeezes every last drop back. That concentrated urine is chemically aggressive. It's where crystals form, where stones nucleate.
The 180 liters a day is the baseline. But when you're running dry, that system has to work harder, and the urine it produces gets increasingly hostile to the tissue it passes through.
Here's where the research gets specific. Harvard Health reviewed the data and found that increasing water intake by 1 liter a day reduces kidney stone recurrence risk by 53% in high-risk individuals. 53%. That's enormous. But, and this is the catch that matters for Daniel and for you, that protection only works if the water is actually absorbed. Swallowing it isn't enough. If it sits in your stomach causing pain, or if it passes through too quickly without proper absorption, you don't get the benefit.
Which is where the stomach enters the picture. We talked about gastric accommodation breaking down after surgery. The stomach can't relax to hold volume. So plain water just sits there, triggering stretch receptors, causing that bloated basketball feeling. But Daniel mentioned something paradoxical. Some people with these conditions can tolerate carbonated water better than still. How does that make any sense?
It sounds completely backwards, doesn't it? Bubbles should make bloating worse. But the physiology tells a different story. When you drink a carbonated beverage, the carbon dioxide gas increases pressure inside the stomach. That elevated intragastric pressure actually triggers the pyloric sphincter, the valve at the bottom of the stomach, to open earlier than it would with still water. The fluid empties into the small intestine faster.
The bubbles create pressure that forces the exit open. It's like the carbonation is giving the stomach a reason to move things along rather than just holding it there.
That's exactly the mechanism. Mayo Clinic gastroenterology research shows that for some patients with functional dyspepsia, carbonated water has a gastric emptying half-life 15 to 20 minutes shorter than still water. The fluid leaves the stomach faster, which means less time stretching the stomach wall, less bloating, less discomfort. It's counterintuitive, but it's real.
For the construction work in Phoenix with post-gallbladder surgery dyspepsia, the guy who needs 3 to 4 liters a day for kidney protection, but can't handle more than 200 milliliters of still water at a time. A lightly carbonated mineral water like Topo Chico or San Pellegrino could actually be the difference between staying hydrated and ending up in the ER with a kidney stone.
It's not just about comfort. It's about absorption efficiency. If still water causes pain, people drink less of it or they drink it faster and trigger more discomfort. Either way, total intake drops. The carbonated option, by emptying faster, lets them consume more total volume across the day without the cumulative bloating.
There's another layer here, though. The electrolyte dimension. You mentioned sodium and ADH earlier.
This is where plain water can actually backfire, especially in hot environments. When you sweat, you're losing sodium, about 1 to 2 grams per liter of sweat, according to Mayo Clinic data. If you replace that sweat with plain water and nothing else, you dilute the sodium concentration in your blood. Your body senses that dropping sodium and suppresses ADH release, so your kidneys stop conserving water and start dumping it. You urinate more before your cells are actually rehydrated. It's a vicious cycle.
The guy in Phoenix, working construction, sweating heavily, chugging plain water because that's what he's been told to do, could actually be making his hydration worse, diluting his plasma sodium, telling his kidneys to flush water out, all while his cells are still thirsty.
That's exactly the mechanism. And it's why the advice to just drink more water isn't just incomplete for some people, it's actively counterproductive. If your stomach can't accommodate the volume, or if you're losing electrolytes faster than you're replacing them, plain water becomes the wrong tool for the job. If carbonated water works better for some people, how do we build a hydration strategy that actually fits your life? Your age, your job, your climate? Because a 68-year-old in Mumbai and a 30-year-old office worker in Oslo are operating with completely different physiologies.
Let's start with age, because this is where the standard advice fails the people who need it most. Adults over 65 have a thirst sensation that's blunted by up to 40%. Their bodies are drying out, and the alarm system is on snooze.
It's not just the thirst signal. The kidneys themselves lose concentrating ability as we age. The countercurrent multiplier we talked about, that elegant salt gradient, it gets less efficient. So an older person needs more water to excrete the same waste load, but they feel less thirsty and their stomachs often can't handle large volumes. It's a triple whammy.
Which is why the National Kidney Foundation recommends a minimum of 1.5 to 2 liters a day for seniors, regardless of whether they feel thirsty. Not thirst-driven, calendar-driven.
200 milliliters every couple of hours. Set an alarm. It sounds trivial, but it's the difference between kidney protection and slow, silent dehydration. And for the 70-year-old retired teacher in Phoenix with stage 2 CKD and post-surgery dyspepsia, that scheduled intake becomes non-negotiable. She can't rely on thirst, she can't chug large volumes, and her kidneys are already compromised. Carbonated mineral water on a timer is her protocol.
Now layer geography on top of that. Take that same person and put them in Mumbai instead of Phoenix. Hot, humid, sweating profusely. The sodium loss through sweat hits 1 to 2 grams per liter. If she's drinking plain water without electrolytes, she's diluting her plasma sodium, suppressing ADH, and urinating out the water before it hydrates her cells.
That's the hyponatremia risk. And in a place like the Gulf States or Southeast Asia, it's not theoretical. People are hospitalized for it. The fix is straightforward. Add 500 to 700 milligrams of sodium per liter of fluid. Lightly carbonated mineral waters like Gerolsteiner naturally contain some electrolytes. But in high sweat scenarios, you might need a diluted electrolyte solution on top of that.
Flip the climate entirely. Oslo in winter, dry heated air. You'd think hydration is less of a concern, but cold suppresses thirst by 30 to 40%, and respiratory water loss actually increases because you're breathing dry indoor air all day. You're losing water through your lungs, and you don't feel thirsty.
In a cold office environment, the temptation is to drink hot coffee all day, which brings us to the myth that won't die. Coffee dehydrates you. The Mayo Clinic has been clear on this for years. At moderate intake, 2 to 3 cups a day, the diuretic effect of caffeine is negligible. The fluid volume in the coffee more than offsets any increased urine output. Tea, same thing. They count toward your daily total.
The Oslo office worker sipping black coffee all day is actually doing fine on hydration, as long as they're not pounding 8 cups and wondering why they're jittery.
Now compare that to the construction worker in a hot climate. The office worker needs maybe 1.5 to 2 liters total, coffee and tea included. The construction worker needs 500 to 750 milliliters per hour of activity, with that sodium supplementation of 500 to 700 milligrams per liter. The volume difference is enormous, and the electrolyte requirement is the difference between staying safe and ending up with a headache, confusion, or worse, from hyponatremia.
Let's build the hierarchy. Daniel asked what the second best options are when plain water causes pain. You've got a stomach that rebels against still water. What do you reach for?
Tier 1, lightly carbonated mineral water with natural electrolytes. Topo Chico, Gerolsteiner, San Pellegrino. You get the faster gastric emptying from carbonation, plus the sodium and minerals that help with absorption. This is the sweet spot for kidney protection and gastric tolerance.
Tier 2, unsweetened herbal tea. Rooibos, chamomile, peppermint. Warm fluids can be easier on a sensitive stomach, and you're getting hydration without the volume load that triggers bloating. No calories, no sugar, no artificial anything.
Tier 3, diluted electrolyte solutions. Quarter-strength Pedialyte or a product like Drip Drop at half strength. These are for high sweat scenarios where you're losing significant sodium. Not an everyday desk drink, but essential for construction workers, outdoor athletes, anyone in extreme heat.
Tier 4, coconut water. Natural electrolytes, especially potassium. But here's the caution. If kidney function is already compromised, you need to watch potassium load. Damaged kidneys can struggle to excrete excess potassium, and hyperkalemia is dangerous.
Then there's what to avoid. Fructose increases uric acid production, which stresses the kidneys directly. Diet sodas aren't a free pass either. The artificial sweeteners may alter gut microbiome signaling that affects ADH, and the carbonation in most sodas comes with phosphoric acid, which is a different beast from the natural carbonation in mineral water.
The bodybuilding staple. High protein means high urea load, and urea requires water for excretion. If you're already struggling with hydration, adding a 50-gram protein shake means your kidneys need even more water just to clear the waste.
The framework is this. Know your context. Age determines whether you can trust your thirst. Geography determines your electrolyte loss. Your job determines your total volume need. And your stomach determines which vehicle actually delivers the water without making you miserable.
Let's distill this down to 5 things you can actually do starting today. And the first one rewires how you think about hydration entirely.
Forget the measuring cup. Your personal hydration dashboard is your urine. Pale yellow, straw-colored, that's hydrated. Dark amber means you're behind, and frequency matters just as much as color. 6 to 7 voids a day is the sweet spot for most healthy adults. If you're going 3 times, you're dry. If you're going 12 times, you might be overdoing it or something else is going on.
That's the dashboard. No app, no smart bottle, no journal. Just look down. And the beauty of it is that it automatically adjusts for your body size, your climate, your activity level. A construction worker in Phoenix and an office worker in Oslo can both use the same metric, and it works for both of them.
Second one, and this is the one Daniel needs most directly. If plain water causes bloating, if it sits in your stomach like a rock, try lightly carbonated mineral water with natural electrolytes. The carbonation increases intragastric pressure, which triggers the pylorid valve to open sooner. The fluid empties faster, less stretching of the stomach wall, less pain. And the natural sodium and minerals in something like Gerolsteiner or Topo Chico help with absorption. You're getting 2 benefits in 1 bottle.
Third, for high sweat environments, construction, landscaping, outdoor work in hot climates, add 500 to 700 milligrams of sodium per liter of fluid. Plain water alone in those conditions can dilute your plasma sodium, suppress your ADH, and make you urinate out the water before your cells get hydrated. It's not just less effective, it's counterproductive. A pinch of salt in your water bottle, or a diluted electrolyte packet, makes the difference.
Fourth, and this is for anyone over 65 or anyone caring for someone over 65, set hydration alarms. Your thirst sensation is blunted by up to 40%. Your kidneys can't concentrate urine as efficiently. You cannot trust your body to tell you when you need water. 200 milliliters every 2 hours, scheduled, not thirst-driven. It's the single most reliable protocol for protecting aging kidneys.
Fifth, the one that makes coffee drinkers breathe a sigh of relief. Coffee and tea count towards your daily hydration. The mild diuretic effect of caffeine at 2 to 3 cups a day is negligible according to Mayo Clinic research. The fluid volume in the beverage more than offsets any increased urine output, so your morning coffee, your afternoon tea, those are contributing, not subtracting.
None of these are complicated. They don't require special equipment or expensive supplements. They just require knowing your context. Your age tells you whether to trust your thirst. Your geography tells you whether you need electrolytes. Your job tells you your total volume, and your stomach tells you which vehicle actually delivers the water without making you miserable.
Here's the question I want to leave you with. As climate change drives more extreme heat events, and we're seeing that play out in real time with heat waves hitting earlier and harder each summer, how do public health hydration guidelines need to evolve? Because right now, most of them are still some version of drink 8 glasses a day, maybe add electrolytes if you're an athlete. That's not going to cut it for vulnerable populations facing temperatures their infrastructure wasn't built for.
The vulnerable populations question is the one that keeps me up. We've got seniors with blunted thirst, people with digestive conditions that make drinking painful, outdoor workers who can't just go inside when it hits 110 degrees. The generic advice assumes a generic body in a generic climate. And that assumption is going to fail more and more people as heat events become more frequent and more intense.
The thing is, the technology to fix this already exists. Wearable sweat sensors that measure electrolyte loss in real time. Continuous urine osmolarity. Monitors that could tell you your hydration status. The way a continuous glucose monitor tells a diabetic their blood sugar. Personalized hydration, not population-level guesswork.
Imagine a construction foreman in Phoenix wearing a patch that tells him exactly how much sodium he's losing per hour, and a monitor that tracks his kidneys' concentrating activity in real time. He gets a notification on his phone. You need 400 milliliters with 600 milligrams of sodium in the next 20 minutes. That's not science fiction. The sensors exist. They're just not cheap or widespread yet.
That's where this is heading. Replacing the eight glasses rule with actual data from your actual body in your actual environment. And for people like Daniel, people with stomachs that rebel against plain water, that kind of precision is the difference between constant low-grade dehydration and actually functioning.
Which brings us to the real final thought here. The best hydration strategy is the one you can actually follow without pain. For millions of people with digestive complications, with functional dyspepsia, with post-surgical gastric issues, that means rethinking the dogma that water is always the answer. It's not. Sometimes the answer is carbonated mineral water. Sometimes it's herbal tea. Sometimes it's a diluted electrolyte solution. The goal is getting fluid into your bloodstream where your kidneys can use it. How it gets there matters less than whether it gets there at all.
The glass of water as a universal symbol of health. It's a nice image, but for a lot of people, it's also a source of physical distress. And pretending otherwise, insisting that everyone just needs to drink more water, that's not medical advice. That's a bumper sticker.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, Soviet agricultural planners in the Aral Sea Basin nearly drove a wild ancestor of cultivated caraway to extinction by diverting its native river delta habitat for cotton irrigation. The plant, Bunium persicum, was rediscovered in a single surviving patch in the late 1980s by an Uzbek botanist who recognized it from a dried specimen collected 60 years earlier.
A caraway rescue mission in the Soviet cotton fields. That's a new one.
The things that almost vanished because someone wanted more irrigation. There's probably a metaphor in there somewhere.
There usually is. This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want to send us a question like Daniel did, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show.
Till next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.